to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday evening, October 30th, one day shy of Halloween 2010, and it's great to have you tonight as we welcome you to a celebratory program this evening. We just eclipsed our sixth year on the radio, and so as we head into what will be our seventh year behind the mics as hosts of the Political Cesspool radio program, we are going to share with you tonight some reflections of our favorite guests, our most memorable behind-the-scenes moments, and much, much more. That's coming up a little bit later. You'll be hearing from each and every member of the Political Cesspool hosting staff tonight as we all give you this, behind-the-scenes look at what goes on here in the cesspool and what has stuck out most in our over the course of the last 6 years. So that's coming up tonight as we celebrate yet another birthday. But first, Keith Alexander is joining me tonight in studio, as always, here at AM 1380 WLRM Radio, as we broadcast to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and, of course, online as well at thepoliticalcesspool.org, simulcasting to a worldwide audience tonight. And, Keith, we've got a lot of, and I mean a lot of material to cover here in the first couple of segments tonight. The bulk of the show tonight is going to be this birthday party anniversary type celebratory atmosphere, and so we're really going to try to put in 3 hours worth of programming in the first 30 minutes so we can get down and have a good time here and celebrate all that we've done. But Keith, welcome.
You know, James, the left never disappoints us, do they? You know, you would think that they would let off occasionally, you know, getting their foot off the gas pedal and allow us to take a deep breath, but, you know, they're like the devil. They never sleep. Because they are of their father, the devil, that's liberals. And, you know, we make no bones about it. We don't try to call them the loyal opposition. They are the enemies of Western civilization and culture. They are the enemies of traditional America. And like I said, they never disappoint. They're absolutely, you know, piling it on every week. So there's never a short. The one thing we never have to worry about, James, is the shortage of material to cover on this program.
Well, that's for sure, Keith. And you get that material every time you turn on the television or flip through the scan on your radio. I was driving around town here, I think just day before yesterday, and I heard a story. You know, and the reason why there's never a shortage of material to bring to our audience's attention is because, as you said, our enemies never sleep in their unrelenting attack against white culture and Western civilization in general. A very obscure elected official in Arkansas, a member of a local school board somewhere, you would have never heard of him if he didn't spit in the face of cultural Marxism. He made national news this week, Keith, and I know you heard this story as well. Arkansas not far from Memphis, so we get a little bit of that regional news. A local school board official in some no-name town in Arkansas was asked recently what he would do if one of his children grew up to be homosexual, and he said an answer that I think most any decent person would agree with. He said he would be ashamed, and he would disown them. All right, so that's, you know, like I said, in my opinion, that's a very basic, common-sense response to you know, how a person, you know, how their initial reaction would be if something, you know, if that travesty would occur in their family. Well, you can't say that anymore. You can't have a Christian view on situations or issues like this. And so, instantly, he was fired. I mean, that goes without saying, or he's been forced to resign. And according to him, he has received hundreds of death threats to the point that he has had to move his family out of state for fear of their lives, all because he said he would be ashamed if his children were homosexual.
Well, James, all I can say is that, you know, it's not just a Christian worldview. I don't think the Muslims are particularly fond of homosexuality. I don't believe that the Taoists are. I don't believe Zoroastrians are. In fact, I can't think of a legitimate organized religion in the world that endorses homosexuality. But, of course, the big religion today is liberalism. secular humanism. That's what people need to understand. That is the competitor for the hearts and minds of Christian youth, of Muslim youth, of youth all over the world. And quite frankly, that's one of the reasons Muslims are so opposed to Western culture, because when they see what Jewish Hollywood keeps serving up, they say this stuff is poison. And this man stumbled across this particular taboo, and it is a taboo, and he's finding out now that apparently you can't have a traditional religious viewpoint regarding homosexuality and hold even the most minor of public offices, which I think, being a member of the local school board up in Pleasant Mountain, Arkansas, or wherever it was, would qualify as. It's just, you know, I guess we're all supposed to take a position, well, you know, homosexuality, don't knock it till you try it. You know, all meat and no potatoes. How, you know, we have to keep an open mind about these things. And, you know, I can't think of any parent that is not under lock and key that would welcome the news that their child is a homosexual. And, you know, James, what is the world coming to when a man can't say that he's not, he would not view that favorably, and he's hounded from public office? That's what they're trying to do.
Well, the world's coming to an end, Keith, at least life as we know it is, when you can't even say something. You know, who would have thought that it would be a thought crime punishable by death threats and you losing your livelihood for you to say that sodomy isn't a good idea? You'd be ashamed if your kids turned up to be sodomized. You know, 50 years ago, who would have ever thought that America would have fallen that far? And I'll tell you, it's everywhere. You know, I shared with you a story also this week, Keith. My wife and I went to take our daughter to get her baby pictures taken this week, and we met at a local park with the photographer that we had hired, and we just basically hired her out of the book because we liked her portfolio. And she was a nice woman. You could tell she probably had a pretty proper upbringing. She looked being, you know, typical middle class, stereotypical, you know, somebody we would associate with, somebody that we would feel comfortable with. And she didn't know me from Adam's house cat, and so not knowing my political views, she was kind of walking on eggshells. She didn't want to be offensive. And this is the kind of political correctness that has so permeated our culture that it is absolutely everywhere. If you look at me and my wife, you can tell that we are, you know, we're pretty waspy. You can tell that we're probably going to, you know, be pretty right-thinking people. Yet she still felt compelled out of because of the false doctrines of political correctness, when she offered us some options, she said, you know, if you want to get your holiday cards made or your Hanukkah cards, as if we look Jewish, she actually said, you want to get your Hanukkah cards. If you want to get your Hanukkah cards made, you can come to me. And then she was sharing a story with us about her prices, and she made mention of the fact that she knew some Jewish people in the industry also who were way overpriced in their and what they offer. She said, oh, but it's not because they're Jewish or anything like that. You know, just instantly catching herself. She was speaking kind of candidly. Obviously, she had felt comfortable with it. But then she would catch herself saying something honest and have to apologize for being honest. And then, of course, she felt the need to not mention Christmas at all. And this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. I can tell this woman didn't think that way, but yet she felt obligated to present herself in that manner. We'll be back, everybody,
right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. As we said at the beginning of the show, don't forget, it all started 6 years ago today. The first time I ever sat in the hosting chair of the political cesspool was on October 26th of 2004, and I still vividly remember that first program, and I'm going to be sharing with you some reflections of that show and so many others during our second hour tonight. Now, here we are 6 years later, bona fide talk radio celebrities hosting a program now known around the world. A lot, too much to recap in any one given show, but we're going to try to do our best tonight as the entire hosting staff and crew gather for a celebratory TPC anniversary show tonight. That's coming up. We're going to be recapping our favorite moments and charting the course for the future. So all of that's coming up in just a few minutes here on tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. But first, Keith Alexander and I are in studio covering a little bit of political talk before we get into party mode. And I was sharing with you how the guillotine fell upon the head of that Arkansas school board member for saying he'd be ashamed if his kids were homosexual. I think that's something any decent, normal person can agree with. Also, Keith, while we're on the topic of education, really quick, I told you I was flipping through the channels, and there's a new program in place in these urban schools, if I may use that term, urban, quote-unquote. And now when they go up to give a book report, it's not your granddaddy's book report anymore, Keith. They give book raps now. So they read the book, and then they make up a rap about what the book was about, and then they go up and rap it in front of the teacher, and that's how they regurgitate that which they learn from the text. So, Keith, book raps, is that going to be something that you think produces the next great generation of American scholars?
It shows you just how ridiculous public education in America has become, James. In the past, it was the job of educators to overcome the ignorance that was, you know, inbred or inborn in their charges and their students and try to raise them up to a higher level and to educate them, which kind of suggested that they might be transformed somewhat along the way. Now, it's obvious that rather than trying to transform them into something better, education is just trying to validate their ignorance. In other words, rap rather than report. In other words, again, no obedience, no genuflection towards the majority culture of America, and European culture is still, you know, Western European culture is still the majority culture of a majority of Americans. But, of course, that's cultural hegemony and, you know, cultural imperialism, cultural oppression. So we've got to allow rapping instead of book reports. And, you know, if you... how hopeless is this nation going to be? It's going to be, you know, the salad bowl rather than the melting pot. There's no effort to have a majority culture anymore, and except to transform white people into rapping third worlders, James.
And let's talk about this while we're on the subject. You know, we've always said you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. Well, let's look at some of the manifestations of the third world in our societies. This comes from Paris, and that's timely because the political cesspool just last week was covered in a major French newspaper. The article appeared in that publication a few days ago. It actually was very objective, and we welcome that, and we'll talk more about that later as well. But this story comes from Paris, and it shows that truly, Keith, diversity is our strength, and third world immigration is a blessing for formerly white countries or not. Here's the scoop. 11 people were injured, some seriously, after they jumped from a second-floor window in Versailles. According to local prosecutors, 13 people, all African immigrants, were asleep in their apartment when a child started crying in the early hours of the morning. The child's father woke up and went to tend to the child while he was naked. Some of the occupants of the house, awoken by the child's crying, went to investigate and mistook the naked man holding the baby for the devil. One of them stabbed the man while he was chased out of the apartment. He then tried to get back into the apartment, and the commotion scared those inside to such an extent that they jumped out of the window to avoid the clutches of Satan.
James,
you can't make this stuff up.
No, James, what you said and what we say and what you said numerous times in the past applies. You can't have a first world nation with a third world population. When you introduce a third world population like these Jamaicans in France to a first world nation like France, well, the result is either going to be high farce at best or it's going to be tragedy at worst. You know, that somebody could have been killed because of the rank ignorance and superstition of these Jamaican immigrants. And there's no effort to tell these people you need to assimilate, you need to be in the melting pot, you need to become more like the indigenous typical Frenchman in order to live in France. No, the left thinks that that is the most culturally hegemonic and oppressive and absurd suggestion yet. In other words, you know, just like in Boasian anthropology, all cultures are equal. In fact, the more primitive the culture, the more we so-called highly developed Westerners need to learn from it. Well, you know, I'm not really interested in learning about voodoo and animism and whatever else that animates people in Jamaica. And I'm not interested in acting like an absurd fool like these Jamaican immigrants who were stuffed into an apartment like cordwood, what, 13 people in a room? My gosh, you know, talk about a tinderbox. This is what the third world brings to the first world. And like Grandma used to say, you can dress them up, but you can't take them to town. When they show up and you reduce things to the lowest common denominator. You're not going to raise up the Jamaicans to the level of Frenchmen. You're going to reduce Frenchmen to the level of Jamaicans, and that would be a tragedy for France and the world.
Let me give you this one, Keith, before we head into the next commercial break. This comes from the political cesspool files of absolute hypocrisy. A civil rights complaint has been filed against a white woman in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who posted an advertisement at her church, of all places, last July, that stated that she is seeking a Christian roommate. And the ad, quote, expresses an illegal preference for a Christian roommate, end quote, according to a complaint filed by the Fair Housing Center of West Michigan. So a churchgoer posts an advertisement at her church saying she seeks a Christian roommate. Somehow, this Orwellian Michigan Department of Civil Rights Fair Housing Center gets wind of it and is, what are they doing to her? She is facing several hundred dollars in fines and other sorts of punishments because a Christian congregant posts a message at her church saying she's seeking a Christian roommate. Michigan Department of Civil Rights gets it. There's hell to pay. Now, on the other hand, here in Memphis, our very own Memphis, home sweet home, this ad is running on Craigslist, and I'm reading it verbatim. We are a young couple in Memphis looking to give away some baby clothes. We have a six-month-old son who has lots of clothes that he hasn't worn or has grown out of. All of the clothing are in very good condition. There are at least 30 outfits in all. It says, we're not asking for anything in return. We're just looking to give them away to an African-American female who needs the clothing. So on one hand, Keith, you got a Christian who is seeking a fellow Christian roommate, and the Michigan Department of Civil Rights brings up charges against her. On Craigslist here in Memphis, in a very public ad, posted on Craigslist, this other one was just posted inside our own church. But on Craigslist, there's clothing that can only go, or can only be sold to, black single mothers. And where's the Southern Poverty Law Center on this? You know, where's the Tennessee Department of Civil Rights? You know, they're all too busy. Southern Poverty Law Center has been paying attention. It's been busy this week trying to take down the Facebook pages of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. But anyway, we're going to keep thoughts on this right after this.
They don't cry. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, we have one more leading segment of political talk, and then it's going to be
party mode here this evening at WLRN Radio. During which each member of the political cesspool hosting staff will be bringing you their behind-the-scenes memories, favorite guests, so on and so forth. So welcome back, everyone, to the political cesspool. And Keith, just before that last commercial break, I was sharing with you the tales, a tale of two hypocrisies, I guess you can say. In Michigan, a Christian woman in Grand Rapids posts a personal ad saying that she is seeking another Christian to be her roommate and has charges filed against her by the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Here in Memphis,
there's a very public ad posted to Craigslist saying that they this couple has clothing for sale, but it's only available for sale to single black females. Keith, your take. Hey, Keith. Yeah, Keith, come over here to this end of the studio. Yeah, we're still working out those technical difficulties here. Keith, hang on. Get on this mic here. We're back in business on the Hey, folks, again, this is one of those minutes, one of those moments during which we need the video. Keith, you're off that mic. Keith is going to be he's going to saunter over to this end of the studio. We got that problem fixed. So here's Keith Alexander the Great, everybody, talking about that hypocritical. Keith, take it away, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, right. The professionalism abounds here tonight at the political cesspool. Well, let me tell you what the deal is. The first one shows the typical approach of the left to tolerance. Tolerance for me, but not for thee. That's all that it's about. In other words, we're supposed to be tolerant of homosexuals, of Muslims, of any other group, of any other race, but they don't have to tolerate us in the least, and they won't. You know, just think of what would have befallen this poor woman had she asked for a roommate of the same race as herself. You know, that as a white woman, you know, all hell would have broke loose. Now, the other thing about the baby clothes shows perfectly the double standard. It's perfectly all right for white people to say, we will discriminate against fellow whites. In fact, the only people that can't have a sense of racial solidarity are white people. Every other group is not only encouraged, but they are, not only allowed, they're encouraged to have a sense, a strong sense, an overwhelming sense of racial solidarity. But whites get involved in this stupid game that a writer named Ian Jobling has christened competitive altruism. In other words, you prove what a righteous dude or dudette you are by showing how much you disdain your own race and treasure and value and have nothing but benevolence in your heart for all other races. Now, all other races, blacks, American Indians, Middle Easterners, you name it, none of these people are required in the least to show any type of largesse or benevolence towards white Europeans or people of white European descent. So, James, it's just absolute, you know, an example of what's wrong with the world today. There is not a retreat from discrimination. Discrimination is fine. It's just that we are now discriminating against white people, not against non-whites. And if you don't know that yet, the mavens of political correctness will make sure that you don't miss that particular lesson. Now, James is, I think, washing his face or something right now, so let me jump right into the next one. It is another article written by the Daily Newspaper here in Memphis. In the viewpoint section, they live for these editorial viewpoint section pieces called No Justice from Jim Crow. Black victims of white rapists cry in vain for closure. Now, for the life of me, I have lived in the South all of my life. I lived through the Civil Rights Movement. And I never had the slightest inkling that whites raping black women was a big problem until I was recently enlightened in last Sunday's viewpoint section of the Commercial Appeal, known affectionately to Memphians as the Communist Appeal. Now, let me read you a couple of excerpts from this article that is just causing the scales to fall from everybody's eyes. It says, years before Rosa Parks fought for justice from her back seat, from her seat in a Montgomery bus, she fought for Recy Taylor. Parks was the NAACP activist crisscrossing Alabama in 1944 when she came across the case of Taylor, a 24-year-old wife and mother who was brutally gang-raped and dumped on the side of a rural road by white racists. Taylor survived only to watch two all-white, all-male grand juries decline to indict the six white men that assaulted her. Taylor was one of many black women attacked by white men during the era in which sexual assault was used to informally enforce Jim Crow segregation. Their pain galvanized the anti-rape crusade that ultimately took a back seat to the push to dismantle officially sanctioned separation of the races and slowly faded from the headlines.
Hey, Keith, if I may, the only thing they failed to... I'm back from washing my face, by the way. The only thing they failed to put in that article was the disclaimer at the beginning, which read, "This is a work of fiction." They're passing this off as this was a fact. And anyone who was around... See, my philosophy on this was, most of the people who were around at that time to know better are either dead or too old to do anything about it. This brainwashed generation that America's cultivating today are probably going to take this at face value.
See, it's absolutely absurd. Again, everything is totally counterintuitive, you know. But to the young of America that read this stuff and have it taught to them and drilled into their heads at schools, this is more real than the world that lives outside the front door. Of course, the reality is that white-on-black rape is one of the rarest of all crimes. This was documented by Jared Taylor in his excellent first book, The Color of Crime. The vast majority of all interracial rapes, of course, are black on white. But, of course, the commercial appeal is never going to run an article about that because that has the wrong script. Instead, they pick the rarest of crimes. It's so rare that almost every year, in the reporting by the U.S. Justice Department, white-on-black rapes is listed as less than 10, which means the actual number could be zero, because anything less than 10 doesn't register on their statistical database. That's why every time you hear about white men raping black women, almost invariably within a couple of months, you can add the term hoax to it, like the Tawana Brawley hoax, something dreamt up in the diseased imagination of Al Sharpton, or the Duke lacrosse team hoax. The idea that white men are lusting after black women and raping them, or that they ever did, is so absurd that it would take a liberal to take it seriously. Anybody that takes that type of article seriously is a complete and utter fool, ought to be under lock and key, James. It's just, and let me read a little bit more here. Evelyn Lowry, an activist whose husband, Reverend Joseph Lowry, worked with Martin Luther King. Yes, he's the one who wrote the book, The Walls Came Tumbling Down, in which he said that, you know, he documented all the womanizing that Martin Luther King did, said that they should get a government apology. And Mrs. Taylor said she wanted a government apology, too. Of course she does, because she knows with that apology, a government check won't be far behind, James. It's nothing but a typical civil rights shakedown and just misinformation. You know, go for the big lie. That's what Orwell said we needed to do in 1984. That's what they're doing to us in 2010.
Well, we've been on the air for about 45 minutes, and that is all the political talk, well, most of it, that you're going to be getting tonight, because when we come back in the next segment, we're going to begin to navigate the rest of the program, during which we will be sharing with you our reflections. You will hear from each and every member of the Political Cesspool hosting staff tonight as we celebrate the Political Cesspool's sixth anniversary of broadcasting excellence as we begin to head into what will be our seventh year. So stay tuned for that, everybody. That's coming up right after this on the Liberty News Radio Network.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
J. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. We are about to begin party mode. This is something we do every year. It's an annual tradition on the Political Cesspool, and God knows we're happy to celebrate another anniversary each and every October. The fact that we've made it 6 years, I think, eclipses any expectations any of us could have had when it all started. And we're going to be sharing with you how we got from where we were on October 26, 2004, to where we are tonight, October 30th, 2010, during the course of the rest of the program tonight. But first, Keith Alexander has a final word on the commentary he was providing with you last segment.
This was a commentary about Recy Taylor, the supposed exemplar of this widespread supposed problem of white bigots in the South raping black women during the Civil Rights Movement. And I think there's some part of this that's hidden that we really need to bring out, and that's Rosa Parks' role in all of this. If you will notice, 11 to 12 years before the famous Montgomery bus boycott, where she was arrested for sitting in the back of the bus because she was just a poor little innocent black seamstress that was sick and tired of being sick and tired, she was up here trying to agitate and act as an agent provocateur to start a campaign based on the spurious notion that white men were raping black women in large numbers in the South. Well, this is typical of Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks was an NAACP activist who was sent to the Highlander Folk School to learn cultural Marxism along with Martin Luther King. She was in this for the long term. You've got a picture over here with her patented mule eating briars grin on this thing, you know, and she had this innocent look to her, but she was actually a schemer par excellence, and quite frankly, that's what this is. And I've, you know, the groups like the Commercial Appeal are always trying to fan the dying embers of the Civil Rights Movement, hoping that a flame will shoot up and that they can again capture lightning in a bottle and the magic they had back then, because quite frankly, more and more people realize how bogus liberalism and all of its facets, including the Civil Rights Movement, are as time passes, James.
What Keith just said actually has a direct connection to what makes this show so special. And as I said, we have two opportunities a year to kind of share with you a little self-examination. And we like to do that on the anniversary of our first broadcast, which was, of course, October 26th of 2004, and our year-in-review shows. But other than those two nights and those two programs each year, we really don't bring to you that which we're going to be bringing to you for the course of the rest of the show tonight. But Keith, you were talking about Rosa Parks. Now, obviously, we're the only kind of show that's going to give you that kind of, well, yeah, the truth, number one. Yeah, that's right, Keith, the truth on any of these issues of political taboo. But we also try to give it to you with factual references and interviews from the source. You know, every time we do these shows, whether it's our anniversary or the year in review, we talk about some of our favorite interviews, most memorable moments, either on the air or behind the scenes. And people have got to remember not just the kind of commentary we bring to you on a weekly basis here in the Political Cesspool, the kind of commentary that has allowed us to remain on the air for what will now be our seventh year, but the guests also. We had Officer Drew Lackey. Drew Lackey was the man pictured in the iconic photo fingerprinting Rosa Parks. He was a sheriff's deputy in Alabama. He was the one who booked her. We had him on the show. Now, who are you going to believe? The liberal media, the lying newspapers who are going to give you a story 60 years removed from when it originally occurred, or are you going to believe a man who actually lived through that, was the man who fingerprinted Rosa Parks, knew everything about the case? Who are you going to believe? You going to believe the people that were there or the people who have read the watered-down history books? Now, this is what makes this show so special. And, Keith, with that being said, I'll turn it over to you. I know you have to leave the studios here at the end of this hour. Favorite shows, most memorable moments, where's the show go from here? This is your time to be profiled. Keith Alexander.
Well, I think it's great that you mentioned Drew Lackey, because that really was one of my favorites. And it was a favorite because you're never going to hear a peep on mainstream media from anybody like Drew Lackey unless they can totally turn him around and have him confess on 60 Minutes that he actually raped Rosa Parks or something like that, something absurd. Any man that feels today like he felt back in 1955 when the Montgomery bus boycott was being concocted in the imagination of the local NAACP is never going to get a hearing anywhere except on this show. This show provides a platform for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth that is so lacking from almost everything else that you get in the media on race issues, on issues of Jewish power and influence. Now, all of the, you know, we've had the top, the cream of the crop, James, when it came to paleoconservative thinkers. We've had Paul Gottfried, Jared Taylor, Paul Craig Roberts, Pat Buchanan, Roger Devlin, Kevin McDonald, Edmund Connolly. The list goes on and on. We just have so many. And, you know, we're the only people I'm aware of that have these people on the radio, on the mainstream radio. I've never heard anyone, with the exception of Pat Buchanan that we just listed, ever interviewed on one of the ABC, NBC, CBS, or the major cable news networks. We're doing their job, and I hope that in the past, that, you know, in the future, what's going to happen is that the groundbreaking work that we're doing is going to be recognized. We're going to be, if you want to hear the history that the left wants to throw down the memory hole, you've got to come to the political cesspool.
Keith, I want to shake your hand for that, what you just said, because that's it. I mean, Keith just pinpointed what makes this so, show so special. It's not us. It's not the hosting staff. It's the ideas that we're able to advance. It's our ability to tell the truth, I guess, but certainly the guests that we have on and the audience who makes this show possible. All of those ingredients are put into the witch's brew this Halloween Eve, and when it comes out right. Both literally and figuratively, if I may. But no, Keith, you know, you're exactly right. You listed just a very, very small representation of our guest list, and you mentioned some of the very best. But, you know, if you browse through our archives over the course of the last 6 years and you browse through our guest list, you will see it is just peppered with those kinds of figures, all of whom should be national commentators because they're that sharp. Now, what we're doing right now and what we'll be doing over the course of the next hour is profiling each member of the hosting staff. You're going to hear from Bill Rowland. You're going to hear from Keith Alexander. You're going to hear, well, you are hearing from Keith. You're going to hear from Eddie Miller and Winston Smith and then a couple of people from the Political Cesspool production crew. Keith, I think, just mentioned some of his most memorable guests. This is Keith's profile segment, I guess. You know, it's hard to get Keith off politics. It's hard to get Keith off politics long enough to talk about himself and what he brings to the show. But after he finishes talking about what he wants to talk about, Keith, what do you bring to the show? And where would you like to see the show go over the course of the next 6 years?
Well, what I brought more than anything is a list of guests that need to get an audience, need to get exposure. The public needs to find out about these people. It's not just pundits and columnists like Paul Craig Roberts or Pat Buchanan, Kevin McDonald, Edmund Connolly. You know, the list goes on and on. It is also people like Drew Lackey, and it's also like the crew, the remaining survivors of the USS Liberty. Now, you know, I'm not going to go into an exhaustive report about the USS Liberty. If you haven't heard about it, Google them up. But where else on the radio dial or on the television dial are you going to find an entire program dedicated to exposing the truth about the USS Liberty? You're not going to find it anywhere except on the political cesspool, James.
We've had the names you know and the names you should know, and that's another thing that I'm so proud about this program, is that, yes, we've had some of the big names, but we've had people that also should be well-known who do good work, and again, our guest list is just littered with those people. Everybody on our guest list, everybody who's ever appeared on this show is a man or a woman of very high caliber, and these are people whose work should be advanced, and we're helping them do that here on the radio airwaves. This show, they're the ground troops, and this show is a facilitator of sorts, and we certainly like to work with people. Yeah, Drew Lackey from Ground Zero. There's just so many. And that's what we try to bring you each and every night. And, of course, once a year on our birthday show, we like to kind of talk about that to remind those who are new. You know, you got to remember, new people are coming to know this show each and every week because of the vast amount of publicity that we generate on a near daily basis. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that in the second hour, too. But you can't take for granted that everyone who's listening to us right now has been listening to us since October 26th of 04. You know, they haven't. Some of these people are very new, and so we like to take advantage of a birthday show to give us a special opportunity to kind of let people know what we're all about, what we're most proud of, and certainly we're doing that now. We will continue to do that over the course of the next hour. And Keith, very quickly, I know we only have about a minute left. You came to the show basically through the Council of Conservative Citizens. That's how you first knew about it. You started serving in an advisory capacity, advising us on different issues before finally becoming the newest member of the Political Cesspool hosting staff, although now you've been with us for the better part of 2 years. But everybody has a story, you know. No one is here now except for me that was here that very first night. Bill Rowland came in shortly thereafter, followed by Winston, then Eddie, and then Keith here, the latest edition. But I think the crew we have right here, and this will be the final word this hour. I think I just said the final word because I hear the music. But the crew we have right now is the crew that I hope to go into battle with for many years to come. And Keith Alexander, you're a big part of it, my friend. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned, everybody. Much more to come.
They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 8th.